What are you going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Another edition of Meet Me at Musual. I'm your host, Daniel Shopdahl from C70 at the Bat, at C70 on Twitter. You got Alan Medlock, a Medlock1 on Twitter from the Redbird Daily with us tonight. Later on, when we get into the minors, you'll hear from Kyle Reese, from also from the Redbird Daily. Before we get too far along, go ahead, rate, review over on iTunes or wherever you find this podcast. Appreciate the fact that we have cracked the 5 review area. We actually now show up with star rating over there on iTunes, and we have 4 really nice reviews. So if you haven't done that, go ahead and do that, because heavens knows you don't really want to watch the Cardinals play. And it seems to be the recurring theme. So Alan, before we get I guess we'll just go right into the Redbird Rewind.
He got it! Struck him out! Look at the scene on the field. McCarver, the first one. Now his infielders all over him. A new world's record of 17 strikeouts in one game.
And since we talked last week, the Cardinals flipped a calendar, but they haven't flipped a switch. We talked last week, they've won a game against the Rockies, split 2 more with the Rockies, because we recorded last Friday, I believe. Split with the Dodgers and Bush, and then have lost the first 2 in Wrigley Field. Hopefully can win tomorrow to stay ahead of the Cubs. Otherwise, they'll leave Wrigley Field in 3rd place. And there's just a lot of, there's been a lot of discontent from a lot of people all year long, but it seems to really be boiling right now. And partly because this offense is just about as miserable as we've seen it for quite some time.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like there's that, we were all optimistic that there may be that other gear. I don't think it exists. I think that we've seen what they're made of. I've said this on the show several times. When you make it to Memorial Day, that's pretty much what your team's going to be. That's where you need to figure out where you're going to improve. And I'm sure they're blowing the phones up and probably behind a lot of closed-door meetings right now trying to figure out that combination that they're going to use. But it's really bad. I like the idea of moving Carp to second. You know, I like that in the lineup. I thought that may do something. But outside of that, I mean, now you just lose another spot in the lineup to where you're getting no punch at all. So I don't know. I think they're going to try to figure out every combination they can until they figure out the way that they're going to go on this. And I just hope that doesn't turn into a situation to where they're not good enough. They're just good enough to not be sellers. And I may have even worded it right, but not good enough to go and get somebody. You know, so they're just going to kind of be stuck in neutral, because that's what it's felt like for a year and a half now.
And I feel like, as much as we've talked about Dexter Fowler and he goes, we go type of thing, as we carry that over from the Cubs, as much as that is somewhat true, I mean, especially with the fact that Dexter Fowler is your leadoff guy and will be your leadoff guy probably for quite some time, this team is tied to Matt Carpenter, and it has been for a while, and Matt Carpenter is a pretty miserable shell of what he has been over the last 10 starts, 11 games. He's hitting 154. He has 2 walks and 12 strikeouts. He has no extra base hits. The Cardinals give him the day off today. And I feel like we have seen him take more days off, you know, whether it's been full. I mean, he took the game off of Colorado just recently. I guess that's the only one. I guess he took the game off of Colorado. That's the only time he took off in May, and you know, he took a couple of days off in April. But it just feels like, you know, I can't remember the time where we would have seen him take two games off in basically a week. But there's just something not right with Matt Carpenter.
Exactly. And, you know, not even the – I'm just going to point out a couple of the bats that were telling. The big at bat yesterday when they had – it was just the perfect situation to do something whenever he struck out on the 3-2 pitch and just looked really bad doing it. Mm-hmm. I worry about his eyesight a little bit. I noticed last year we had talked about this. You know, last year he had trouble picking up balls at first base on pickoff attempts. I always felt like he didn't see things. I wonder if that's not a bigger issue. One thing that – another at-bat that he had that was really, really nerve-wracking was in the second game against the Dodgers when they were up big. Now, they were up 4 runs, I think it was. They had first and second with, one out. Well, Pham comes up, and Pham strikes out. Pham battles, but strikes out. That then you have the at-bat. It may have been no outs. I can't remember. But it was sixth, seventh inning, somewhere where you get a poke somewhere, and it gets pretty interesting. Well, they just go with whimper, and Carpenter's at bat was terrible on his strikeout. And it was one of those to where the leader of the team right there has to do something. You know, it's frustrating because the Cubs right now have at least two guys in Bryant and Rizzo that always come through in those situations. And you look, and the Cardinals have none, and I don't even know if there's a player right now that's close to being that kind of bat to where you just know something's going to happen. So I don't know, but you're exactly right. It seems like a lot of these doldrums offense-wise really circle around him. And no matter what combination they have right now, it's just hapless. There's times where I feel bad talking about players, especially long-time Cardinals. There's times where I feel bad about Peralta a little bit, as much as we beat up on him. Mm-hmm. But one thing right now, Molina, Peralta, they've got to do something in the lineup with those two. I know that Molina hit the bomb today, 3-2 bomb. He hit it well, you know, hit it out. But I felt like he also let Lester today out of that inning with that double play. And I was like, you know, you go bases loaded, no outs, you do get two runs in. It was one of those situations where he was struggling, and he was really in his own head, even in that second inning. And I really thought they let him off the hook. And I don't know what the answer is, but the lineup is just terrible past Piscotty the last 2 days, and it's pretty sad.
Well, and part of that problem is the fact that Jed Jerko was out for this weekend, and we saw
absolutely
Magnera Sierra come up, and there is some argument of why he didn't play today. If you only have him for 2 days, why don't you start him? But you also saw that yesterday. And I was at work. I only got to listen to some of the game, but obviously it sounds like the ball that he misplayed in the ninth or eighth or whatever it was a very catchable ball. I think I saw a 91% catch rate on that one. You hate to see that out of a guy, young guy, have to have that happen, but, you know, and maybe that's why it led to some benching, which it shouldn't. I mean, we've seen people do a lot worse and play the next day. So
yeah.
But you know, when you don't have Jed Jerko in the lineup, I mean, Magnera Sierra may be a very talented ball player, and he still may be a spark to this team, but he's not a slugger, and he's going to be hitting seventh or eighth. I mean, that's just the way it is. You don't have Jed Jerko, you don't have a lot, and then you've got Johnny Peralta in the lineup, it's very difficult to find a Johnny Peralta defender, and there's a reason. I mean, he is definitely struggling, and then you, like you said, Yadier Molina. He may be hitting the ball harder. He may be getting the ball out of the ballpark more, but he's not hitting regularly as much. You know, he's hitting around 250, and like you said, the double plays, it's, you know, it feels like you can't, he's not a plus hitter. He's about an average hitter, and he shouldn't be hitting third or fourth or anything.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah.
This lineup struggles. And as Derek Gould has pointed out, it's kind of inverted. A lot of times we'll see good things happen from 7, 8, maybe 9, especially if Adam Wainwright's playing, but then the top of the lineup can't do anything. And more often than not, if your top of your lineup's not going to do anything, you're not going to score many runs. Cardinals haven't scored 6 runs since the second game of the series out in Los Angeles, so it's been getting close to 2 weeks now. But I don't, except for reshuffling some people, and maybe that's just shuffling deck chairs, I don't know what else you do.
Yeah, I think that's they're going to be running out probably every combination. I hope that's the situation, just to try to get better. They see that things aren't working. You know, I mean, you can see there's a little bit of urgency. I think you can really feel it with in Mozeliak interviews. He was a little, I wouldn't say testy, but he was short with Hayes in the pregame today.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he was, it was, you know how it is. It's like you said it perfectly when you said he doesn't mingle. And I know we're talking about something different, mm-hmm. but I can just see where he's not going to be, there's no middle ground in this. You know, he's going to go after. Said some things about Grichuk that I thought were interesting, and I love how they're handling Grichuk, by the way. Going down there, just a complete reset. You know, he may play a few games where he doesn't swing the bat.
Yeah.
You know, he's just going to learn how the strike zone works. That's how I feel about that. But I think his patience is running thin. So I wonder, I think, I'll say this, I'll be surprised if Peralta is with the team when Wong is activated. I think that DeJong has shown that he's going to be here to stay. I don't know if he's going to go back down. If he does, I mean, watch out. You know, Cardinals Twitter is going to burn down. But I think that's the right fit. You know, somebody else that I think is overexposed and I think is short for the Cardinals, I think it's going to be Jose Martinez. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, he may get another couple weeks, but I think he's going to be the next one that gets jettisoned for somebody else, just to room for improvement. I think that, you know, Pham's one of their better players. He's going to have to stay. Piscotty, I'm down on Piscotty, but he seems to have come back with a little more focus. So we'll see how that goes. Diaz seems to be picking up, but I think he's going to be playing catch up all year just because of the poor start. You know, if they were truly looking to upgrade shortstop, maybe one of the spots. And I hate to say that because I love Diaz. Yeah, Jericho, then you're going to have to figure out your second base situation. But that's still, of any of those names that I brought up, that's still not a bopper that makes a difference in the middle. So if they're going to be players at the deadline, which I think they're going to be, there's going to be some of these household names and these core players that are not going to be Cardinals. I'm really curious to see how this all plays out.
Yeah, I mean, there does come an argument about when does this how can this team stop being so stale? And whether that is, you know, changing personnel or whether that's a change of philosophy. I mean, the Cardinals have been successful for a significant period of time. And it's not that they've been that way only one way. I mean, they have modified and adjusted over the past 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's starting to feel like that the personnel, and I'm not even saying that's Mike Matheny, although that's obviously fair for most people to think.
Mm-hmm. Easy target,
easy. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Very, very much so. It's difficult to know where that personnel, that change needs to come from. But it feels like we've gotten as much as possible out of what this version
great
of
point.
The Cardinals can do.
Great point. That's and it's, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago about stay the course, don't deviate from it. But I'm wondering if it hasn't run its course to where, okay, well, now we know what these guys are. You know, we have over a year and a half with this roster to let's figure out what we need to improve. I truly think they're looking at that right now, too. I think there's going to be some turnover, and it may not be going and getting the big acquisition, you know, because that's not their style. Now, it wouldn't surprise me this year if they were to go do that, because I think there's going to be stepping out of the comfort zone a little bit. But I think we may see a lot of Memphis up here before too long. I think that's going to be the next run of, hey, Memphis and Springfield are both playing well. You know, let's start promoting. Let's see if that can improve this ball club a little bit. That may be one area they try. And, you know, it could be the roster turnover could make the season exciting. I hope that the results follow. I hope we have something to cheer for other than seeing the new guys.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is a team that right now is, you know, still very much in the hunt, which is more a factor of the fact that this division has not been very good. But as somebody pointed out,
yeah.
I saw on Twitter today, I think the Cubs next, you know, something about the next 24 games or something, or maybe a good chunk of those next 3 weeks are against poor teams, sub-500 probably teams. There's a good chance that this team, you know, the Cubs team finds their footing and they could go on a roll. You know, right now, But right now the Cardinals are a game and a half out, even after these last two losses. Milwaukee has lost as well. Milwaukee's two games over 500 and leading the division. Two games over 500 wouldn't get you fourth place in the AL and the NL West. I mean, it just depends on where you're at. But I think you do worry about the Cubs catching fire. They're not going to be the team that everybody thought they were going to be getting into this, obviously. I mean, they're not going to be a 100-win team or anything like that, but it didn't take that, obviously. It's only going to take a 90-win team right now, may not even take that to win the division. The Cardinals can't afford to get too far behind, and because this team doesn't have the horses to make it up. But, as you said, you've come to the Memorial Day mark. And you can't argue that this team should be better than what it is. You can argue that Matt Carpenter should be hitting more. You can argue that Steve Piscotty should be hitting more. Dexter Fowler should be hitting more. And maybe if you did all that, this team would be winning more games. But
Go ahead.
I think they're not, and they've gotten to June, and they're not. I don't think we're going to see Matt Carpenter hit 350 the rest of the way to get his average back up to where it normally is.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what? What worries me most about that comment is I think they think that. I think they think those two, be it Fowler and Carpenter, are going to be the ones that turn around the offense. You're going to get what you get out of Jerko, which has become probably an all-star this year, and you can kind of ride it from there. Then you can be incremental in your improvements. And I think Wong's going to come back and hit. I question whether this offense can be much better than what it is now. And I think they're going to have spurts where they score a lot of runs. There needs to be something injected into the lineup. I don't know. Mozeliak says funny things too, though. He says, hey, if you pitch anywhere close to what we're pitching, you're generally in the hunt. Well, I don't think that's a statement of, hey, we think we're fine where we are. I think that's a, hey, we think we have the pitching. We're going to try to augment with some offense to do this. I think he's working things over right now. It just feels like the last month has just felt like something's going on. Like some of these moves are kind of a precursor type of situation moves. I don't know. I may be dead wrong, and they may be complacent. I just don't see that. But I was thinking about something today. Do you remember when you could almost point out to the instant, not even the game, the instant, where La Russa was done with the way they were playing? You know what I mean? He was frustrated, you could tell. But then he never changes. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I understand he's trying to adjust and put together situation here and here and here. I think he's done a poor job of it. You know, I've said that I thought Matheny is showing improvement, but I think that he's kind of regressed a little bit here lately, and I think it may be due to the pressure. I don't know. They don't seem like they're showing a lot of it, but the lineup makeup is terrible right now. And I understand it's because Jerko's out. Even Mozeliak said that today in the pregame. But it just never seems – I know we're dealing with two different personalities on this, but that's what I loved about La Russa. You know, he was crass. He was tough to deal with. But you could tell whenever he wasn't getting the ball club or the effort that he expected or the results. With Matheny, you can't ever tell that. He defends the guys – to a fault, you know, so I don't know. It just feels like that's where some of this, just the stagnant, you know, lack of motion comes from, I think. With a little bit of Matheny, you take over your coach's mentality, and I think that may be part of this.
You know, and I've never been really in a athletic environment, and I've never had that mindset. So I don't know how much it would matter. Let me put it that way. I mean, the players still go out and play. But and we don't know what goes on in the clubhouse. But I feel like that if Matheny had tipped a table or, you know, kind of reamed some people out, we might have heard about that secondhand or something like that.
Yeah.
It feels like that he hasn't done anything.
I think he's pro player.
Oh, sure.
I
would imagine, and my guess is, I don't know, but my guess is that Matheny as a player didn't necessarily care for the overly expressive, you know, managerial moves. You know, that he didn't.
Yeah.
He may not have gotten much out of somebody, you know, saying, hey, you don't get to eat tonight, or hey, you know, you're running extra laps, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, he didn't get that, and so he's not going to do that. But that's not to say this team isn't going to. And they may not. Don't get me wrong. I mean, these are professional players. They're paid a lot of money, most of them. Well, they're all paid more money than I'm going to get made. But, you know, some of them get less than others. You know, they're people that have pride in their work. A part of me has a problem thinking, oh, well, if you just yell at them a little bit more, they're going to wake up and play better. But, you know, when you know that you've reached, you know, you're disappointing, you know, everybody. And I think they know that they're disappointing the fan base. They know that they're disappointing. They're not getting the results they want. But, so I don't know. I don't know what you can do. You know, it's not a young, hungry team. I mean, there are some young guys on there. And then we saw Tommy Famous played well. To the point that it's disappointing, as you say, to see him hit sixth or whatever when he should be batting, I hate to say third, but
he would have been the better option.
Yeah, I agree. So, you know, again, I don't know what to tell you. Now, we did see some stuff this week, as you said. We saw the release of Jonathan Broxton, the promotion of John Gant. We have seen over the last couple of weeks, we saw Selukovic. There's been a turnover in the bullpen, which is a good thing because the bullpen needed some help. And like Mozeliak said, this gives them the chance to drop people down to Memphis, bring them back, you know, other people back up because now there's options out there. You know,
yeah.
While there, you know, Matt Bowman was like the only guy with options. And while he was going well, you weren't going to send him to Memphis. Now that's an option now. Because he's pitched a little bit worse as of late.
So yeah.
In theory, you could send him down, especially just to give him some rest. You have Brebbia out there. You have Gant out there that can go down. I think those are the three that can swap to Memphis, but they could. And then maybe we'll see that, because I know that Bo Zalok has talked in the past about extending your roster that way, making it so that you have basically like a 30-man roster instead of 25, because you get a 10-day window. You bring somebody up, you know, 10 days later you send them down, bring somebody else up. You can do that all year long if things need to be. We kept talking about Broxton. We've talked about Broxton, I think, every show. Kept talking about it since we started, about how they needed to get rid of him. And they finally did. It was to the point that you really couldn't argue anymore. I don't think there was any rationale for keeping him around, especially when you see him go out there. I mean, a whip of over 2 is just impossible for a reliever to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that I'll go back to the bullpen here in a second, but I think that we're getting to that point with Peralta as well,
mm-hmm.
where I think that they've squeezed out everything they can, and this was this weekend was one of those chances for Peralta to maybe show that one glimmer to maybe keep a spot. I think they're trying to deal him, and I think it's going to be an Adams type deal. That's A, you get traded to somewhere that you want to go, and B, we're not going to release you. You know what I'm saying? We don't want to embarrass you. You know how I feel about that, and I feel like the organization feels like that as well. I think that it's just kind of reached that point. The ball today that kind of led to this rally starting, Jerko plays. I mean, it's one of those that he makes the play on it, and Peralta doesn't, and it goes from a possible, I don't know if you, it could have been a double play ball. It was hit sharply, but it goes from possible double play to getting under Peralta's glove, just due to the lack of range, and you're going first and third, nobody out, which really puts the pressure on Leak. Now, he gets Baez on that strikeout, and then, you know, he hits Jay. Now, that's on him. You know, he on a two-strike count, you can't do that.
It's John Jay, though. I mean, he somehow has this magnetic field that brings balls to him, so.
Exactly, and it hit the most minuscule part of his jersey. You know what I mean? It's one of those, and it was questionable. Yeah. But here's what bothered me about today. The first guy they get up is Segrist, and that is a complete, we haven't thrown him in a while, get him up, and that's going to be our answer right here. What I don't like about it, and I don't feel like they had faith in going to Segrist in that spot to face Schwarber, I don't think they have a lot of faith in him. What really is bothersome about that is that you don't have faith in your $30 million man in Cecil right there, and that's the reason he was signed. Yeah. And another thing that bothers me, that inning, that's a strikeout situation. Go out and go after him. Rosenthal needs to be up in that situation. Well, but he can't throw back-to-back days. So they're just hamstrung. A, with whatever the situation is with Rosenthal, and B, the lack of confidence, and duly so that they don't have any confidence in the back end of those bullpen guys. And I think that's a problem. It's obviously a problem. But
yeah.
Those are some of the things that need to be fixed. And that's why Leake was out there. Leake took the loss. Leake gave up the grand slam, but he was wavering. I mean, he lost his chance to finish that game when you hit Jay with two strikes. You know, you need to go somewhere else. But Matheny didn't have faith in anybody else, and that's just shows how bad things are in that situation.
And it's, I mean, you're right. But you look at, you know, Brett Cecil, kind of went on the haircut method, you know, and I will say he allowed a couple of runners to score against the Dodgers. But for the most part, he's pitching a little bit better as of late.
Sure.
You know, if you go over, well, since that Boston series, let me clear that off. I'm pulling up Baseball Reference. Boston game, he gave up a run, didn't get anybody out. So after that game, he's pitched four innings, hasn't given up an earned run, only two hits. He struck out two. I think he's allowed. I'm trying to see if I can find out how many inherited runners scored. He stranded about two thirds of his runners. I think that's a situation. I know Twitter would have gone crazy to bring him in there. But I think this is, it's kind of early enough in the season that you've got to say, look, this is what we signed you for.
Exactly.
You got to get him out there. If you're going to do anything.
I completely agree with that.
Yeah. And now, you know, I didn't watch this part of the game. I was out at the movies and I didn't watch the game. I watched the first couple of innings, but I didn't watch after that. And so really reading the recap, I kind of understand why they left Mike Leake out there. Again, like you said, bullpen's kind of iffy. He'd had a pretty good sixth inning. It didn't sound like he was, I don't know what the first two balls were hit, how hard they were hit. You know, I don't think he wasn't at 100 pitches yet, I don't think. I mean, I can see
reasons. He's at 97.
Was he at 97? It's close. As well as Leake has pitched this year, and as little, I mean, he's given up, what, one, two home runs this year? Well, I guess he gave up a couple. He's given up a few more lately. But still, you know, and as bad as Schwarber has been, I know Schwarber burned us last year. Burned the Cardinals last year. And you don't bring Sechrist in. Because Sechrist, you know, doesn't get lefties out as well as he should for being a left-handed pitcher. And Schwarber torched him. He was the one that torched him for that big, long home run, last year, the year before. So I can, you know, I get that, but you know, I can see why you leave Leake in. But warming up Cecil doesn't make any. I mean, not Cecil. Sechrist doesn't.
I was going to say that was the complete. I was going, why is he up? I was like, this is why you have Cecil. Mm-hmm. This is why you have Rosenthal. And then that's the thing that really drives me nuts about Rosenthal. But I'm also the guy too that Rosenthal's their best reliever, and I think you should throw him in any situation. And I understand there's going to be times where you can't. But there's got to be some clarification on that. You know, that's because their bullpen can be really good. If O is going to go back to somewhat what he was last year, their bullpen's going to be really good. But they have no faith in him. And I just thought, I was like, why, of all people, is Sechrist up? That his matchups are awful. You know, he has the cross splits, you know, he's better against the right-handed bats. I don't know. It was just frustrating. And you knew they had to leave him in at that point. The minute he hit Jay, I sent out a tweet that said, this is about to be bad.
Yeah.
You could just tell. And everybody was like, everybody felt like that. They were like, you knew something bad was going to happen right there. So it's just frustrating. Their crowd gets into it, and you don't have much of a shot, and it's frustrating. You just could have won both those games.
Yeah, and really should have. And as somebody pointed out on Twitter today, and they updated, I think, after the game, the Cardinals in the first four innings are like a plus 40 on their opposition. But in the last five innings, they're minus 44. I mean, they score and they shut down. You know, it's like once the starter gets through his early stuff, you know, it should be that you see the starter two or three times, you should be hitting him better. I mean, that's the way that baseball typically works. But the Cardinals seem to be able to jump on people early and then not do anything else. You know, I guess it was kind of surprising that Molina hit that home run today after the Cardinals had scored two runs in the first inning, because, I mean, you just don't see that. And that's the problem. I mean, especially when the bullpen's kind of scattered. But you've got to be able to add on. And we see that so many times that they can't. And they have opportunities. You know, the game yesterday on Friday, they had runners on second and third. Nobody out. Did not score. You have, you know, Piscotty on first, and then they tried the hit and run with Molina that they should never, ever try again. The hit and run with Molina with Piscotty. That never works. Because as much as Molina can put the ball in play, and I get that, although he's not doing it quite as much this year, I don't think, it just seems like it never fails that he will strike out the time that Piscotty's trying to steal, and Piscotty has no chance of getting there. I mean, and I don't, you know, Piscotty's not a great base runner, so that's part of it, but that just never seems to work. And we see that so many times. I mean, what did I think Zach Gifford put out, that the Cardinals have lost 38 outs on the base pass this year. If that's this year,
yeah,
I think that's low, because it feels like there are so many times where the Cardinals are doing something bad on the base pass. We talked about the Matt Carpenter tried to turn it into a triple, you know, in that Carlos Martinez start. I mean, there's just about every game you can point to and say, look, stay on the base, and we win the ball game. If you get off the base, like today, like John Lester, again, I didn't see it. I just read about it. John Lester picked somebody off first base. There is no other team in baseball that can be picked off of first base by John Lester.
Yeah. And it was funny, too, because I feel bad. Because I think Pham is a great base runner. But the thing is, he was so far out that you could tell that he was uncomfortable. Yeah. You could tell by his mannerisms. Because in theory, the minute Lester turns to throw, you should go to second.
Right.
You shouldn't try to retreat.
Right.
And Pham didn't realize it. Pham didn't know what to do. I mean, he was completely stuck. And I felt bad for him, because I thought that he had one of the better base running plays of the day when he scored from second on that bloop, but he had a perfect read on it. I've really been impressed with Pham's base running. But I felt bad for him today. Well, then everybody comes out and was like, well, hey, you got to make sure he can do that. I was like, that completely killed momentum right there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was the Cubs came out and they were a different team, and it was frustrating.
Well, then it was also today, wasn't it today that Peralta gets a hit but then doubled off first base on a liner?
There's no reason. There's nowhere to go. Yeah, right. It's dumb.
So, I mean, that's the kind of thing that fans have complained about for 2 years now, at least, if not longer. And it doesn't seem to be getting any better. Somebody, again, if you're watching Twitter, you find amazingly lots of stats put out there. Very few of them are positive. But right now, somebody put out that since 2014, the Cardinals are basically in the bottom five with their three to six hitters in slugging. I mean, they've basically been terrible in the middle of their lineup for 3 years. It comes back to haunt you, because, you know, 15, they just got by on some incredible pitching. I mean, how many games did they win, you know, 2-1?
Yeah.
I mean, that game that year was crazy. 14, I don't remember what, you know, 13 was the year they had all that, you know, runners in scoring position stuff that just over, I think that kind of masked a lot of the problems they're having. I don't know what the option is. Like you said, they need that big slugging.
I'm bad about that on the
presence.
Yeah.
And that's a different topic, because I think it's fine to say we, but I try not to as much as possible. And tangent we won't get into right now. But they've got to have that big hulking presence in the middle of the lineup. I mean, they, you know, since Albert, you know, they have not ever had it. And they've had success. But, you know, Alan Craig was there for a while, that, you know, the good Alan Craig, before he was swapped out with some alternate universe doppelganger that couldn't hit the ball. You know, you had, you know, there. I know the plan was to have Tavares in there, but, you know, that plan unfortunately changed. It feels like this team's got to do something. And it feels like, and I think they know that. And I still think they're going to be players, but again, where do they know it enough to get out of their comfort zone?
Well, and that's right. That's what worries me is I think they may have painted themselves into a corner into doing something big. I will say something today that happened, and I think that the frustrations are boiling over everywhere. And then I know this has no bearing. Mosey, like, I think he's the best for a reason because he doesn't let a lot of this interference bother him. But I will say this: the gloves completely came off in the booth today. Oh, McCarver was really critical. And it was funny. I mean, I'm just like, okay, so we went from Shannon to where, you know, with McLaughlin, you can really tell when he's frustrated. But he's got to do his job. Right. So there was a point today after the Schwarber homer, which McCarver was like, this is going to be trouble, you know, and said that he hits that bomb. I bet there was a probably 5 or 6 minute sequence where McCarver did not say a word, not a word. And then you could tell that Dan's struggling to find things to say without being negative, and finally says this. He goes, one thing that's probably going to be overlooked is the fact that you get the two strike hit by pitch on Jay, and yep. McCarver goes off. And then, you know, he's all over it. But then I read a Twitter deal today. Someone posted something when I got to the house a little bit ago. I guess that Roboski said some things about Matheny. They were subtle for Roboski. They were subtle, but they were directed that way, and it was bullpen management type stuff. So I'm wondering. I'm just like, okay, you know, that's this is the kind of stirring that we probably need because this isn't an organization to do that. So I think that everybody knows that. Listen, there's got to be some changes. So that gives me a little bit of optimism.
I will say that it does feel like there's a lot more angst, if you will, outside of Twitter and fans who are going to get worked up. I mean, Cardinals won 100 games a few years ago. Everybody was worked up. I mean, it happens, especially in social media nowadays. I feel like every game is magnified. Every game is either the best team ever or the worst team ever. I mean, there's just a lot of that.
I'm guilty of that.
Oh, wait, me too. I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, there's so many times, you know, like Tara and I would do Gateway, and the whole week could be, you know, could have won every game. If they lost Sunday when we did the show, then it was a bad show.
You know, here we go.
You know, and vice versa. You know, they could have had a terrible week, but you went on Sunday, and you feel a little bit better. But when you get the people that are paid to be, I don't want to say objective, because Fox Sports Midwest, they do great stuff. They're not objective. They're paid by the... I mean, that's... They have a partnership with the Cardinals. And I've talked to the people over there before, and they know that. They're not trying to be this hard news organization. They're entertainment. They have this relationship with the Cardinals, and they're gonna give them the benefit of the doubt. Could they be a little bit harsher? I think they probably could and still get away with it, but you know where they're coming from. You know, the radio's kind of the same thing. That being said, Mike Shannon's going to say whatever he wants to say. And he can do that because if you think bad PR from the bad team, you fire Mike Shannon after saying something about it.
Exactly.
Know, that's not going to happen. I mean, that's not going to happen. But, I mean, those guys, they're not supposed to be objective, but they've seen more than we have to some degree. I mean, they've been a part of this. I mean, Hrabowski's been on the field. Shannon's been on the field. These guys, you know, Carmen Carver's been on the field. They know, and I think they can give the benefit of the doubt to some things that we can't because they know what the situation's really like. So when they're frustrated, when they're saying, you can't do this, you really can't do this. This is bad. This is a bad team, and that's a bad philosophy. And, you know, it kind of boils back to where does this team get that kick in the pants? What does this team do? Can John Mozeliak do anything about it? I know we saw a couple years ago he did the John Lackey trade, but I don't see a trade like that actually coming around anymore.
Yeah, especially with everybody still being in the hunt, it's you know, it's going to be tough to make a move like that. I don't know if you remember there was a lot of angst about that deal. People were really mad to see Craig and Kelly go. Mm-hmm. And I think there's going to be a deal like that. Not necessarily, it may not be for that talent level, but I think there are going to be some fan favorites that won't be here, you know, after the deadline. And I think
Nationwide.
It's going to, you know, people are going to be like, oh, of all the guys, areas to improve, we get rid of those two. And I think you're going to get that anyway. But I don't think anybody's off limits. I mean, of course you're going to have your Fowlers. No one's going to take that. Mm-hmm. Your car, unfortunately, that's probably not going to be moved. In outside of their starters and Molina, I don't know if you should get too attached to anybody right now, because I think that there's going to have to be talent traded to get what they're going to need.
There is.
Unless you can get it. Now, the caveat being, if you can get a team like the Chris Davis, like you and I talked about, you could probably get Chris Davis for some top-level minor leaguers, because that's just how that regime works. But I don't know if you're going to get that lefty on it, and I don't know if you want to do that. So I don't know. I'm real curious to see how they play this out.
I don't feel like they can afford another gamble. You know what I'm saying? I don't think they can take a guy
that's a good point.
That hasn't had a great success rate, that is maybe having a good couple of months, but isn't necessarily what you'd expect. Or, on the flip side, a guy that's struggling this year that normally doesn't. I don't think they can do that. I think they've got to, if they're going to make a move, and if they will, it's a different story. But they're going to have to do something that's a significant and most likely almost automatic type of move. I mean, we talked about Josh Donaldson in the past. And while even if you could do that, and the Blue Jays are playing much better now, so I don't think you could even do that trade anymore. But even if you could get a Josh Donaldson and figure out what you did with Jerko, that's the kind of player, because he's almost guaranteed to be a very, very good player and a guy that can really do something for this team. But we thought that's what they were getting at Dexter Fowler, and while there's still a lot of time on that contract, and I don't think anybody's saying they shouldn't have signed him right now, it's that leadoff spot is not doing what they wanted it to, but in that top of the lineup, we keep going back to it, that's where this thing has to improve.
Yeah, and that's, back to the Donaldson deal a little bit, too. I think that, 6 weeks ago that we felt like that's what they were targeting. Someone to play third. I think you could live with Jericho at third. But I also think that you go out and get a better player and readjust your defense around that, because I don't think defensively you're good enough to dictate that a guy stay where he is. I think that's going to have to be the situation. I think you just go, hey, what can we get? We'll figure it out from there. What are we going to have to get up to get said player? And then we'll figure it out from there. Because defensively, I think it's improved, but it's not great. So go out, get your bat, and figure out how you're going to play it. So that's, I don't know. And Donaldson may be one of those deals, too, that is probably off your radar right now, just because I think that Toronto will try to keep him. But I still think Toronto is going to be sellers to a point, just because I think Shapiro, that's just the way he does it. I don't think they're going to keep any of those stale contracts. So I don't know. I mean, I wish we had a list. Whatever move they make is going to be one that we're going to be, how did I not see that coming? Because that's just the way the Mosaic works.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But you're right. I mean, some of this improvement has to come within whatever they get. I fully expect that whatever bat they get, a good one, everybody will improve with it. But these guys have got to show some signs of life themselves, and it's got to start up top.
Yeah, it really does. Okay, well, I think we've complained enough, and there's so many things to complain. Oh, and also, we're done with this part, just a second, though. I think I'm in agreement with you, but when Colt Wong, I don't know when I think he can come off the DL like Wednesday. I haven't heard anything.
Is it okay?
I think that's what I saw somebody say.
I couldn't remember. I knew it was either Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. I knew it was the first week. I just wasn't certain.
Yeah. So it does feel like you said that Johnny Peralta leaves thin. That's another financial hit for the club. But Paul DeJong is in a different situation than Magnera Sierra was. I mean, Sierra still needs to develop. DeJong is very close to the major leagues anyway. He was right there. And he's proven that he, at least right now, can handle his own. The league hasn't adjusted to him yet. He's just had a good first week or so. But he's a guy that doesn't have to play every day. I think he can play you know, fill in. He can alternate. He can play second. He can play short, I think. He can play third. You know, he can give that rest. Now, the flip side of that is, you get rid of Peralta, and I guess it doesn't make any difference, but right now, it's a very infield-heavy type of team for the fact mm-hmm. that they're only counting 12 players, but, you know, what else do you do? It doesn't feel like, I think you just have to ride with the four outfielders and all these middle infielder types. And, I mean, we're talking, you know, what, Greg Garcia and Paul DeJong backing up the main starters. It's an interesting configuration, and as against, it doesn't provide a whole lot of power. That's not the group that usually hits the ball at the ballpark.
Yeah, all those guys are great complementary pieces, and I'm fine with that. But you're right, you just don't have the bopper. I'm curious to see how they handle Peralta the next I wonder if he plays tomorrow. I guess if Wong's not back till Wednesday, I guess it probably shouldn't matter, and you'll probably have DeJong and Jerko still. But I just kind of wonder if he's not going to get that one shot tomorrow. And maybe Jerko play second. I wondered about that, but that seems kind of far fetched at this point. I think that you figured out what you need and or what you have to do, I don't know. I was just thinking that maybe they'll give him another start, maybe see what they can do. He hit the ball on the screws a lot yesterday, but today, I mean, everything was straight up, and I don't know. I think his time is up, and I feel like everybody else does too. Are you finding it curious at all that DeJong hasn't played any third at all?
It's a little weird.
That's what I thought.
I mean, for the fact that that's where he's come up. Now, that may mean that they plan on keeping him around, and he's probably going to play more second base than third when he's up. Because Jerko wasn't going to be, I mean, they weren't going to play anybody but Jerko there. It is a little surprising that, you know, like somebody pointed out, Jerko has a whole lot of second base experience. Paul DeJong has a lot of third base experience, and yet they're playing opposite positions, you know. But, you know, I think that's, you know, Jerko may be comfortable at third, and that's where they want to keep him, and then that's why they'll play DeJong at second. Yeah, I think maybe on Peralta, before we go back to that, before we move on to a better subject, maybe if they had won today or won yesterday, maybe they would do that with Peralta tomorrow. Maybe not with Jerko coming back anyway. But we're losing both of those games in a really, I don't want to say must win, but it's pretty close. I mean, they really need to take a game from, I mean, they had their shot. You know, they sent basically their, you know, Mike Leake out there. They, you know, they sent out, a very good Lance Lynn against John Lackey that they should have beaten. I mean, those kind of, they've had shots, and so now you have to put out basically your best lineup, whatever that may be, and that doesn't include Peralta. So, I feel like they've got enough information. I don't think anybody has any real debate about what Peralta is now. I think you could almost buy the respiratory problem, and he'd come back and he'd do okay. And he has gotten a few hits, but he's shown no power. He's shown no rage. And there's other people that can help this team more. So we'll see. So the good stuff is that the starting pitching is still pretty good, and Adam Wainwright has figured it out. And I say that knocking on wood and everything of that nature, because as soon as you say that, he throws up seven runs in the first inning.
Yeah.
But it's a stretch that we have. He's dropped his ERA by, I think, like 4 runs over his last 5 starts. He's gone deeper, you know, 6-7 innings into games. Heck, he provided all the offense in those last start. He's looked a lot more like the Adam Wainwright we're used to, and the Adam Wainwright we thought we were going to see this year.
Yeah, it's very uplifting. There's a part of it that really kind of sucks, though, because now that's all 5 starters are pitching well, and I feel like that we're going to waste that even more. You know what I mean? With that, with the lack of offense. I hope that makes sense. You're just like, God, that's been weighing on my head, weighing on me so heavy. Just like, all this great pitching they're going to waste because they can't put anything together offensively. But yeah, it looks very good. I thought his last two starts were nails. I thought he looked really, really good. And I was, I just thought, you know, it has gone from where I thought you're going to have to ride out a situation of Martinez and Leak or Martinez and Lynn as your co-one and twos. Well, Wainwright's put his name back in that situation now to where he could be your co-ace and you want him locking down some games. Like, I would rather him throw tomorrow than Walker. You know, one of those situations. But yeah, it's very great news, and yeah, good for him.
Yeah, very much so. And we've seen great stuff out of Carlos Martinez. Like you said, everybody, for the most part, is doing what you want to see. It's just that they don't get any support, and that's difficult to.
With the Capital One Venture Card,
you hate to see guys. Well, like Lance Lynn, you know, go out there and what, two, you know, eight innings or something, give up a run, and it all goes for naught for the most part. You know, you make one mistake and you give up a home run, and it just doesn't take much. You hate that, but unfortunately, that's what's happening a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You do hope that if the Cardinals are able to make some sort of move to up, or even if they don't, and Carpenter and Fowler and all them start getting going, that this starting pitching will continue to go well, and that increase in offense will be enough to get some wins.
Yeah, gosh, I hope so. And that's, you know, kind of going back to your earlier point, but they're just loaded. I just hope that they can find the right combination to score some runs if this is what it is. And it is going to be an infield logjam. So you just kind of wonder, do we have the right guy to be able to put these pieces together? I mean, I don't know. I hope that DeJong and, you know, Garcia, I think we figured out what Garcia is. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's going to be a defensive replacement. He's a good pinch hitter. You know, and he throws up good at bats. He's going to get a spot start. He's going to be what he is. But is DeJong going to grow crusty? Is Wong going to find his way back to the bench? You know, I just don't know. I hope that we just don't lose all this plus pitching that the Cardinals have because they just can't figure it out. I don't know. It's a very frustrating and nerve-wracking time.
It really is. It really is. But that's all we can do is deal with it. That's, you know, and hope that things turn around. You look at the schedule for the Cardinals again. Lots of games coming up, and not a lot of off days. But they do have, you know, a stretch with the Reds that should be winnable. They have the Phillies coming into town, which should be winnable. They got
in the last year and a half. The only thing that bothers me about that Philadelphia, that Cincinnati series, is the Cardinals always have trouble beating them in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So that's. I just hope that didn't blow up on them. I hope they're able to bring that down. You know, I hope they improve their play up there a little bit. Sorry to cut you off.
No, and I know early in the year I haven't looked at it recently. Early in the year, the Reds were kind of getting by with, you know, short starts and a lot of good bullpen, but that wears it out pretty long.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So you'd like to think that they could get to some of those guys again. They got to score some runs. Then they got, you know, four with the Brewers. Then you got another set. You got the Orioles. Then another set with the Phillies, the Pirates. That one makeup game with the Reds. Then you get into the Diamondbacks, Nationals. So, you know, as we talked about the Cubs having a better run, the Cardinals have a. If not,
they have winnable series.
They have some winnable series, and they have a big series. Like that Milwaukee series is big. I mean, they've got to win. They got to split it. Really, be good to win three out of four, because you don't want to drop behind the Brewers. Even though I think everybody expects the Brewers to fall off a little bit, but they, you know, right now they're leading the division, and that's the team you got to beat. So, hopefully, everything will start to come together. But it's difficult to know that will happen. Let's go ahead and go into our minors report, our futures report, talking with Kyle Reese. And then on the flip side, Alan and I will take your Twitter questions and talk a little bit, wrap things up. So let's talk to Kyle.
0-1 to Poole. In the air, left field, and Pujols has given St. Louis the lead. A dramatic, towering three-run home run. Stunned in disbelief here in Houston.
Joined again by Kyle Reese from the Redbird Daily to talk about the minors and things of that nature. Again, Kyle, as we mentioned before we started recording, we have to address the elephant in the room, and that is the fact that Louis Robert is not going to be a Cardinal. He is a White Sox. And now we have gone over, this is the minorest of details, but we have gone over his name and and picked like three different times. And I'm pretty sure that John Mozeliak said his name was Robert. But when they, and he talked to him, he said, I've talked to him, it's Robert. And yet when they announced it, I think as with the White Sox, it was all of a sudden Robert. Did Mozeliak lose something in the translation? Is this why the Cardinals didn't sign him? Is he just couldn't say his name?
Can you imagine that if that was the case? Like, they're in the White Sox press conference, and they ask him, and he says, yeah, I couldn't sign with the Cardinals because they kept mispronouncing my last name. No, yeah. So, again, and I guess this is one of those things that kind of gets lost when you're not surrounded by a guy in his, like, normal language in his normal habitat. Whenever I heard him talk, it always sounded like Robert to me. Now, again, you know, every dialect rolls words differently. They roll letters differently. Mm-hmm. Again, like you said, Mozeliak was pretty adamant that it was Robert. But the thief will call him because that's what he's done to my heart. The thief, he wants to be called Robert, and something got lost on multiple different occasions by multiple different people. I mean, over that week before he signed, I looked at a couple, like I said, I kept combing through because I thought, how could I be so wrong about this? Like, I know I've heard him say it. And, you know, everyone kept saying Robert. So, he's a robber, that fella.
That's right. And he will be doing it for the White Sox, unfortunately. There seems to be conflicting stories about whether the Cardinals offered the most, whether they were short, whether he, you know, whatever. I don't know that we'll ever know the full story. But this is still a blow to a team. I mean, again, we're seeing, we've said it a lot of times, it doesn't have star power. This felt like their best chance to get one, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's, you know, I have it on pretty good authority without getting into too many details that the Cardinals did offer him maybe in excess of like 200 or 2 million more than what the White Sox offered him. And it really seemed like, you know, a lot of got made of the video that the White Sox made for Robert, that it was like that put him over. But I get the gist that it was the personal connections that he started making with the front office, and like he really understood the Sox more than anything. I think that video that got a lot of play, I think that probably did a lot to I guess, you know, it proved that I celebrate that story. But I think he just made connections there.
Well, and you can't. Okay.
His connection to the White Sox. No, please go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I it was another cutout, so I wasn't sure. But I mean, those personal, and that's the thing that even in the free agent market, we tend to forget that these are players. This is not just a bidding war. I mean, that's a lot of it, and money's going to talk. But, I mean, there are times where all things being at least semi-equal, those personal relationships can make a huge impact, and maybe the Cardinal front office just isn't warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it is. I mean, I don't know about the Cardinals front office not being warm and fuzzy, but I definitely think that this was a case where Robert and his agent, his representative, probably set a number and thought, all right, if, you know, theoretically, that say that number is $25 million, they probably said, we're going to get $25 million. That's the number we want, and if we get that, then we'll get to the differences in the organizations. And when the number went over whatever number that they set, they probably said, all right, this is the connection. This is where I want to go.
Right, and that makes sense. All right, so we're done with him. he can be now forgotten until he's a superstar and we cry about it 5 years from now. Whatever. But anyway, we've got to talk about the guys that are actually Cardinals right now. We're seeing a number of those obviously make the majors now. Paul DeJong, we saw Magnus Sierra come back up for a little bit of time, and some others that have made that jump. That creates gaps in the minor league system, and we saw Jack Flaherty take care of one of those gaps moving up to Memphis this week.
Yeah, you and I are talking on Friday night at about 6 o'clock, 6:15 or so, and that means we're an hour away from Jack Flaherty's start, and I've completely cleared my for tonight. His arsenal and the way he pitches and how aggressive he is, it is perfect for the Texas League. You know, usually your hitters are a little bit more aggressive. As you and I have talked in the past, the Texas League, which is where Springfield is at, it's a little bit more hitter friendly. So for him to go to the PCL, the Pacific Coast League, which is also hitter friendly, but maybe even more so than the Texas League. And you know, he can kind of just tear through an underexperienced hitter. He's going to get a lot of 4A hitters, and it's going to be interesting to see how he handles that. You know, his stuff plays, and I personally believe it'll play, you know, at the major league level. But it'll be fun to watch him tonight and to see how he dances around the strike zone, how aggressive he is. I just keep thinking to myself, you know, looking at the full organization, how grateful I am that he gets a chance to throw to Carson Kelly tonight. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, and any prospect who makes that jump, you know, if Gomber gets off the DL and he makes the jump, if Alcantara gets his brain together, you know, any one of those guys are going to get a chance to pitch to Carson Kelly. And what Carson Kelly's done this year, all indications, everyone that I've talked to, is that he really has taken his entire game up a level. And I think that's awesome. I think that's a great thing for a guy like Jack Flaherty to get a chance to pitch to.
And that may lead to a different question, and I think that that's good, and I'm also glad I didn't try to schedule this interview a little bit later, because I wouldn't have gotten you. But with Carson Kelly producing like he is, I mean, when does the drumbeat really get going for him to become up to St. Louis and at least be the backup, and maybe resting Molina a little bit more often, because I mean, obviously the Cardinals could use a little bit of a thump.
Yeah, so you know, after the Cardinals lost that tough one today on Friday, it seems like everyone, as I scroll through Twitter, I'm seeing the same like names rinse, lather, repeat. You're seeing Vogt's name, you're seeing Bader's name, you're seeing Kelly's name. You know, Cardinal fans are just looking for a pulse. To me, Carson Kelly's the one guy who I don't think they'll make a move to bring up to the majors. Like, I cannot envision a scenario aside from a Yadier Molina injury that gets Carson Kelly up to the majors. They love Eric Fryer. They love what he does as a backup catcher. And there isn't a reason. They just wouldn't do it. You know, he's not going to play first base. They're not going to have him play third. He's not an outfielder. You know, so I don't see it happening unless Yadi gets hurt. And this is what we talked about on the very first podcast I joined. You know, I was fortunate enough to join you and Alan with. I understood why they did it. Why they re-signed Yadi. I get it. I understand that, but it just doesn't make sense from a fiscal standpoint or a competitive standpoint to free up Yadi. And, you know, Carson Kelly, this is when he's supposed to be faltering. Mm-hmm. And to see him succeeding, like, he's topped his home run totals from last year. He's halfway to his double totals last year. And again, all indications is that he's learned, he has a better feel for pitch calling, behind the plate, framing, all of that stuff. You know, his arm is strong. He has good pop time. It's the Cardinals gave an aging catcher a pay raise over 3 more years, and it's really going to be interesting to see how all that shakes out with him. But I would think that you'll see you know, some of the other guys get in a promotion before he would.
And that also benefits, like you said, anybody that makes that jump, they'll get a chance to identify and pitch to him maybe creating a connection that will go forward, and maybe not, depending on what the trade deadline brings to us. So, but that's a topic for another day. So let's talk about the last week in the minor leagues. I know you've been working up for your weekly article for the Redbird Daily on the prospects in the week that was. What stuck out this week?
The first thing that stuck out is the Palm Beach rotation was really, really good this week. Ryan Helsley and Darian Gonzalez both had two starts. In those four starts combined, they didn't let up an earned run. Darian Gonzalez had two consecutive seven innings, six Ks, less than four hit performances, no earned runs, like I said. And then Helsley had an eight-inning pitch jam that had a game score of 85. He struck out 11. He had a really good start again last night. He only struck out eight over six innings. He's not walking anyone either. The concern with him is that he throws his fastball. His fastball is heavy. He has an interesting pitching mechanic that has a delay in it, and his fastball is heavy. It comes in at 96, 97. It is hard. It is nasty. It's deceptive. And he has a pretty okay changeup and a pretty okay curve that he's getting. If you look at that, a pitcher like that can often throw balls. But to see him cut down on the walks has been a great, great sign. And then Zach Gallen for Palm Beach had an 8.2, almost got his first complete game, 8 2/3 inning gem of a start. So at every level, there's great pitching. But the one thing that I see on a regular basis is, as I'm putting this together, is there's one guy at each level that has an astronomically successful week at the plate. And that guy usually plays pretty well on the field that week, too. And then everyone else is just kind of okay. The Cardinals lack, in the minor league level, especially now that Paul DeJong is at the major league level, but they lack a serious amount of offensive consistency in the minors. And that's been really interesting for me to watch. Other than Carson Kelly, which is kind of interesting, and Luke Vogt, but he's had a really, really tough end to May. He's striking out a little bit more, and his power is kind of evaporated. So that's something I'm going to keep a close eye on as June ramps up.
You wonder with Vogt if there's not a little bit of a lack of focus, just because, like we've talked about before, it felt like he had his shot at being called up, and they didn't do it. And especially when you see a team that's struggling for offense and still carrying 12 hitters and 13 pitchers, and you can't break through, you could easily get down a little bit, I would think.
Yeah, I would hope not, but yeah, it's a human being thing. I can't imagine being 26 years old from St. Louis, from the Florissant area, and loving the Cardinals growing up, going to Missouri State. And, all of a sudden you're at Springfield 4 years after you've been drafted. You're at the town you played college ball at. And that's probably a big check mark to check off your list. And it's probably a really awesome thing. And then all of a sudden the next year you're in Memphis. And that hometown team that you've loved, that's you bleed Cardinal Red, is right at your fingertips. And you're doing everything you can for 2 months to light the world on fire, to get the attention of the front office. And, other than a quick little hit on a radio station where Mo says, he's really opened our eyes, you're not getting anything other than that, when the truth is you might be a better hitter and a better defender at first than the guy who's there right now, who at least currently at that level. I firmly believe Matt Carpenter will be fine once he starts laying off some of the high cheese that's kind of eating him alive. But right now, Luke, in my opinion, Luke is the better option at first base currently, in this small little window. You're probably dead on. He's probably just feeling it. And, once he started struggling, he probably just thought, man, this really hurts. If I'm hitting so great and they're not thinking about calling me up, it probably just hit his confidence hard, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And like I said, hopefully that's just a temporary thing, and then he'll get back to hitting well pretty soon. Before we wrap it up today, I did get a question on Twitter today about Delvin Perez and why he hadn't had any at-bats this season. talk a little bit about. Oh, that's a terrible. I always wanted not to do that. That's the lazy journalist thing, right? Talk a little bit about. I've always tried not to do that. So why don't you tell us about the short season teams, when they start, what the deal is with this, and why maybe Delvin Perez hasn't played this year.
Don't feel bad. I was listening to Martin Kilcoyne on the radio today, and he had Tony La Russa on. Mm-hmm. And Tony caught him off guard by making fun of him, and he asked him like right away, so who's been made for this year? He did it sincerely. Backtrack. So don't feel bad about that. So the way the short season clubs work, as opposed to the full season clubs, the Cardinals have four full season clubs that extend to mid-A level. Those are usually guys... who, you know, 2005 and earlier draft picks, and then the advanced 2006 picks, guys like Tommy Edman, guys with college experience, Andrew Kisner, who, you know, college experience. They usually go and they'll play at the advanced lower A levels. Of course, then you get guys like Harrison Bader and Paul DeJong, who are on another level, and then they get another bump to Springfield. But most of the time, the lower A levels, A Palm Beach and low A Peoria, the full season levels, that's where like the 2015 advanced 2016 level. And then right about draft time, the short season clubs kick up. And the short season clubs are usually comprised of international signings, and of course the undrafted signings. And they comprise those rosters. The reason that Delvin Perez doesn't have an at-bat yet is because I believe that they're taking it as careful with him as they can. The beautiful thing is he would have been a full-season roster. He would have been Peoria, because you have to be careful with Palm Beach because of the Florida State League, because hitters usually don't do as well there as they might in an ordinary league, because it's a pitcher-heavy league with swirling winds and big ballparks. So he would have started at Peoria, which might have been okay, but the concern with Delvin Perez, while he got off to a great start in the Gulf Coast League after being drafted, is he kind of hit a wall, and he kind of hit a wall defensively too. So the reason that Delvin Perez doesn't have an at-bat yet is because they didn't put him on a full-season squad. They're waiting to put him on a short squad. I have a guess it'll be Johnson City. And one of the advantages of that is he's been able to stay at the extended spring training facility in Jupiter, which, again, that's Palm Beach. But he's been able to stay there and work on a daily basis with Jose Oquendo about how to play shortstop. And I believe that the organization weighed that went into their thinking when they decided to assign players to a level. Like, Dylan Carlson was an aggressive promotion. He went from GCL to Peoria, which is very rare for a kid who was drafted at 17 the year after he was drafted. That's very rare, and he's actually struggled a great deal at Peoria because of the challenge. He just wasn't ready for it yet. But Delvin's a little different, you know. With Dylan Carlson, he's out in the outfield. You know, outfielders get reps, whatever. Shortstop is such a demanding position. So they decided to hold him back at the Palm Beach facility, the Jupiter facility, let him work with Oquendo on a regular basis, and then here in probably the next 2 weeks if they send him to State College, and 3 weeks if they send him to Johnson City, like I believe they will. Then he'll start getting at bats. But a lot of times, like I said, with the 2016 picks, the undrafted picks, and the international free agents who have worked their way up the system, they hold them back for instructions so that when they get into game action, competitive game action, they're ready to go. They're a little bit more seasoned and have a little bit better idea of what the organization wants and expects out of them.
Okay, well that clears that up, and it makes sense, and it'll be something to watch this summer. Now, normally this time of year, I guess you're getting really excited about the draft that should be coming, what, next week? Not so much this year, I guess. There hasn't been, doesn't feel like, obviously, for obvious reasons, not a whole lot of attention paid to that.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking, man. Like, especially locally, because there are a few kids that, you know, like Jake Berger from Missouri State and Tanner Hawk from Missouri, who will be first round. Draft 7th, if one of those guys fell, it'd be really cool. It's like, oh man, there's a chance they might trade Jake Berger. You know, I'm kind of interested. I'm interested to see how it all goes. You know, what their philosophy is going to be, because they don't have hard money to sign. You know, their exit would be like the remaining 7 draft picks or 6 draft picks, whatever it is. But yeah, there really is no excitement. It's kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah, and that's going to be tough, and we're going to have to wait and see as the years go by how much of a gap that puts in the organization. Like you said, right now there still seems to be an offensive gap anyway. So hopefully Mo will either fill that somehow or sign some free agents to deal with it. Kyle, I appreciate you joining me tonight. I will let you go so you can get all excited and ready for Flaherty's start in Memphis. And we'll talk with you hopefully next week.
All right, my pleasure, Daniel. Thank you very much.
All right, and I appreciate that with Kyle. There's some interesting stuff there talking about the, you know, Luis Robert, again, you know, we've talked about it, and we talked about it last week, how frustrating that was. We got to hope for some... It's one of those things, Alan. I mean, the Cardinals have pitching, but even on the minor league level, there's just not any hitters there. I mean, nobody that's going to come up and make that impact. I don't think even... You know, Harrison Bader's your top hitter right now, but he's not going to come up and make this team better.
Yeah, it's another thing too that somebody else has to be jettisoned to get him at bats, and it's going to be tough to do because everybody's kind of at the same level right now. You know, just a question I have for you, and I don't know if they would even do it, but is at what point does Kelly start getting considered for a call up to play? Once or twice a week.
Well, and I say this again. I hate to say it kind of sounds funny. I'm sure to our listeners because Alan didn't get a chance to hear what Kyle had to say. And Kyle talks about that. Yeah. I hate to just, but he did say that. You know, Kelly is doing better than Molina is. It really boils down to Kelly's really stepped his game up. But they're just not going to bring him up to sit the bench. It feels like that. It's going to take a Molina injury to get him up for any length of time this year. You know, what that means for next year, are they going to be able to share the playing time, which is what we hope for? Or does that make Kelly, again, this is the kind of thing we've talked about as soon as Molina signed that extension. Does that make Kelly expendable? I don't think it has to, but... If you're looking to make a big splash, and if you're looking to get that big bat in here, it may take Carson Kelly. Because that's really your, you know, really, I don't think he's got much more cachet than Harrison Bader does. Let's put it that way.
Sure, at that skilled position, I agree. And that's, you and I had both talked about that, and some people had kind of poo-pooed it right away. But you know, a prospect's a prospect. And if you can get if you can go get somebody for him, I feel like you have to do it. You know, that's, if somebody said something to you about, hey, what about Alex Reyes? I'd be like, no, don't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, but Kelly, I feel like you could do. And I think that may be one of the names that are brought up. And I would do it in a heartbeat to get, you know, get a big bat out of it.
Yeah, I mean. You might. I mean, again, you probably would have to, because with no Reyes, and again, we wouldn't want to send Reyes anyway. But without Reyes as an option, you know, it might take a Kelly and a Bader. It may take 3 or 4 guys like that to bring in a significant piece.
Yeah.
I mean,
speaking of big bats, Pujols just hit number 600.
There it is. And that was a segment. Something we're going to talk about here in our final segment, Swinging Away.
Tying run at second base. In the air to right center. This game is tied. Going to third is Pujols, and it's 9-9. They just won't go away.
talk about segueing there now. That's what I'm talking about. But anyway, Albert, 600, which is awesome. I think what they said, the ninth player to do that. Is that right?
Number nine.
Ever. It's pretty remarkable. And it's a situation, as you and I talked about this week, and as some others have obviously mentioned as well, is not necessarily getting the publicity that you would expect for something that's only happened 8 times in 100 and something years of baseball history. A lot of reasons for that. Alan, what are your main takeaways on that?
Well, yeah, I'm glad. You know, I know that as Cardinals fans, we got to see the best 11 years of his career. He goes to LA. I think he had aspirations of it being a lot bigger than it is. And, you know, of course his body's given up on him, but I'm glad to see him do it. You know what I mean? 600 is just not what it used to be, you know, and that, unfortunately, that's for a lot of negatives, mainly PEDs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that they're just tainted. And a lot of the numbers are tainted, and it sucks for a guy like Pujols that I feel like, at least for the most part, got there clean. You know, his name's been very, very linked, but I'm not so sure any of the big boppers in those days were completely clean. That's just my opinion. You know, I'm not saying anything, but I'm still glad to see him get there, and I think there need to be a heck of a lot more publicity and pats on the back for this one than a lot of the other ones.
Yeah. You know, Anaheim, as you and I were talking about, is that, you know, kind of overshadowed by the Dodgers. I mean, you've got the best player out there in Mike Trout, and he's still not necessarily the face of baseball as much as he should be. Imagine, I mean, it's impossible to imagine what would happen if Mike Trout was a Yankee. I mean, it's just, you can't imagine. Yeah. I mean, you would not be able to go anywhere without seeing his face. So there's some of that. And it's that West Coast thing, even the Dodgers have to deal with his son. You know, so many of us are asleep, and you have to find that out the next day. I mean, you know, look, we're recording this. Pujols has just hit his 600th, and it's almost 11 o'clock in the Central Time. You know, there's a lot of night. There's a lot of people, a lot of Cardinal fans that aren't going to find out about that till the next morning. And all you can do, I mean, yeah, you can watch the YouTube and you can watch the clips on whatever, you know, show or, you know, whatever you want to see, but it's not the same as following that live, you know, and there hasn't been that big countdown or anything like that. But it's also the fact that 600 is big, it's huge, but it's 162 away from, you know, the record. I mean, we're not closing in on a record. Even as exclusive as this club is, we're not closing in on anything. And so I think there's some factor too. But as you know, we said, if he's doing this in St. Louis, you know, it's kind of like 1998. It doesn't matter how bad the team is, everybody's going to be fired up for waiting for that historical moment.
Yeah, without a doubt. It would be it would be the talk of the town. You know, there's no doubt about it. It's just, you know, it's highly forgotten, and it's frustrating that it's like that. But you're right. I mean, it's kind of forgotten out there, and it is a lot to do with you're right, that the West Coast, there's a lot of good baseball that goes on out there that does not get the publicity that it wants. But, you know, it kind of makes you misty out a little bit that it didn't happen here. I get it on both sides, because I didn't want him to re-sign for what he signed for. And, you know, I think they benefited from letting him move on, but it still kind of sucks that it doesn't get any more run than it is right now.
Yeah, the last few years wouldn't be as good as they've been. I mean, obviously you probably wouldn't have Michael Wacha. You definitely wouldn't have Stephen Piscotty. You probably don't win. You don't go to the World Series in 2013. You know, Albert's lost some time, so the Cardinals would have to fill in.
Mm-hmm.
You got to figure Mike Matheny's still hitting him third no matter what's going on, which is, you know, fair, I guess. I mean, given his – but there'll be a lot more people complaining about Albert Pujols these days, I think. Like, why is he still playing? Stuff like that. And you'll want that. I mean, you shouldn't have that. I mean, he's a legend in St. Louis. And let's be fair, if you could take Albert Pujols right now for this team, you probably would.
It's about what they need. That's what they need, a veteran bat just like that. I agree with you.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, be interesting to see him traded back to St. Louis for the last couple of years for his career. I you know, it's not going to happen, but LA should think about it. I mean, I don't, and again, I don't know that that works out for the Cardinals. As much as Pujols still has his power bat, he doesn't have a whole lot of anything else. He didn't have the DH to help him out.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of reasons not to. But still, you know, you look at the fact that he is hitting for power. He is still a bat that people fear.
Yeah.
It's that, not what this team has had.
Exactly. And I know that this is going back to some of our possible trade scenarios, but everything that we just touched on right now is kind of in the reason it makes zero sense. Because the contract's 4 or 5 years, it's way heavy. But that's where a guy like Tulowitzki makes sense to the Cardinals. And the fact that you get that veteran bat that's going to be your 3, 4, 5 guy and can still hit and can still play, probably not going to happen. You know, it doesn't make sense. It's going to cost a lot of prospects for a guy whose body hasn't held up. But it's still, that's the kind of ilk that I want them to get. You know, something like that. And it could be somebody past their prime. I don't know. But it's somebody that can still get out there and has learned a way that to get on base and that, to knock runs in and all that. So not to go off on a tangent on that after Pujols, but that's what I mean. I agree with you. When you said that, I was like, that's the exact kind of bat that I think they need, that veteran bat just like that. Maybe on the down deck, maybe on the end of their career to come in and just hit and search for that World Series ring.
All right, let's battle through our Twitter questions. We've done a little bit of that, but we'll get back into them. Dennis Lawson, Grazen, our Green Agent, GR, triple, double three, N-A-Z-N, you know Dennis. Hypothetical, what would it cost to send a baseball player approximately the size of Johnny Peralta into space for a while? And by a while, he means eternity. Dennis has always been interested in getting people off the roster in some unique ways. In fact, to tell a little Cardinal blogger history, I believe it was maybe the second blogger day, and we bring these up now because next week, Alan and I will be in St. Louis for the blogger day. Back this time next week, we will probably be hanging out talking to each other and not recording it. But anyway, Dennis asked Mo in the question and answer if he could borrow his office for a little bit so he could call and release Ty Wigington. Mo did not let him. Although it wasn't too long, I don't think, after that the Wigington may have been let go. Yeah, that's Dennis. Anyway, you know, sending a baseball player into space, you know, honestly, if you're not worried about them coming back and you're not worried about them surviving the trip, probably doesn't cost that much, you know. You get them to NASA and, you know, just kind of add them into a rocket launch. I'm thinking $20,000 at the most, you know, just travel and, you know, paying somebody to look the other way. I don't know. Seems reasonable to me.
Well, yeah, let's reach out to Richard Branson. I mean, let's right. see if, you know, I mean, are we may be able to make this happen? He's yeah. trying to get guys to go.
That's right. I guess we should look and see how much they're charging those people to make that first space trip. So,
yeah.
Look at that. Lance Dance 1, Adam Butler, also from the Redbird Daily, because everybody is.
He will be with us
and yep,
next weekend as well.
He will also be with us next week. Says, when the time comes, do you think they choose to keep DeJong or Peralta? Which we've kind of touched on. It really, really doesn't feel like there's a logical reason to keep Peralta. I mean, you could make the argument to send down Sierra. I mean, there were logical reasons for that.
Sure.
You make the argument to keep him up, but you can make the argument. You really can't make the argument, I don't think, to keep Peralta over DeJong.
No, I agree, and this kind of feels like a Greg Garcia type situation with DeJong. You know, when Garcia made it, you could expect that ultimately he got sent back down. You know, he kind of bounced around there for a little while, but he didn't do the short stays. You know, he stayed because the team needed him. You know, that he filled that gap. He was that fifth infielder a couple times. This is what it kind of feels like with DeJong, but I think it even ramps it up a little bit to where I think they're grooming him to be in the lineup. that's where I find it interesting that he's playing a lot of second. Mm-hmm. Is I wouldn't be surprised if DeJong and Wong, one or the other, aren't with the club. You know, at this point by the break, I don't think it's in Memphis either. So I think that he's up to stay. I think the minute that he hit in Colorado, I had a really good feeling that this is probably one of those moves that whenever Wong gets back, that Peralta's there, that spot on the roster will go to DeJong in some way. I still think it'll be via trade. I think that the return is going to be terrible on what they get for Peralta, but it's just going to be a trade. But at this point, too, a DFA is not out of the question. So I think they'll probably go to Peralta camp and say, okay, what would you guys like us to do?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I know that some are talking about trades. I just feel like if there was a market for Johnny Peralta, they'd have done it by now.
Yeah.
If you could get anybody to give you something, even if it's just salary relief, you would do it. So I don't know that there is. I mean, I don't think there's anything else you can do but to do other than. Okay, so Rusty Groppel, he's very good. He's _ very good is his Twitter handle. He's with y'all over at Redbird Daily.
Exactly. Yes. We're representing today.
You got it today. His follow-up question to that was, if they do keep DeJong, which we say they will, how much does he start to cutting into Diaz's time at shortstop? That's an interesting question. I have trouble believing that he would do much, but, you know, I think Diaz has hit better since he moved into the bottom of the lineup,
yeah.
I think. So he probably stays out there no matter what the defensive situations are, but it's probably pretty telling that they haven't put him there yet at all.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I don't think it will. I think they're going to ride Diaz out, and just because I think there's a part of this that they think this is just a sophomore slump and that he's pressing a little bit, because I think you can see it. What bothers me is, I don't know if you know, Zach Gifford and I were kind of going back and forth. It may have been yesterday or the night before. I can't remember. It was one of the evening games. I know that. As all the balls that he pounds into the dirt to the third base side, Diaz did. And I would have thought that he led the league real easy. But he was actually like fourth. And it was actually fourth, league-wide.
Yeah.
So it kind of surprised me about that. But it just does feel like today I saw him just, I think he had four or five foul balls that he just smoked, but it was right to the wall, right to the third base dugout. And I just don't know. There may just be a book on him right now, and he's going to have to make those adjustments, which last year he was great about it. This year he hasn't been so great. So I think he's there to stay at least for this year, unless they make a move to get a shortstop. I think that's where they try to improve. I think they're going to give every chance for Diaz to improve before they decide to pull the trigger on that. I don't think that's the plan at all. I think he's maybe a spot starter short, but I think it's going to be more of a second, third type situation.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I mean, Diaz is going to get some days off, but it's going to be interesting whether they would use DeJong there or if they use Garcia there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Garcia's, he probably could. I don't know. I don't know who would be better in that situation. I don't know.
Miklas had a good point about DeJong too. He said that he's hit so well throughout his minor league career and through the Arizona Fall League last year that they want him to feel that. And I think Rusty may have even written this article for us of him. They want DeJong to fit the Jericho role that he had planned, you know, to have his bat in the lineup. It may be somewhere different every day, but he would be hitting just about every day. Mm-hmm. That he may do that. So, that'll be something to watch.
Yeah, it will be. I don't think Diaz gets too much. He may get a little bit here and there, but he won't do anything serious. Wouldn't think. All right, and then we have, I've gone off of, I think, from Beefcake5, Ben Kelly, who sends us questions quite often. At what point do you call up Weaver for the bullpen, or do you save him as the fifth starter if need be?
I think that that's the plan. I think the first move that they make outside of the Memphis bullpen, if they're going to get one of the starters to come down and put in the big league bullpen, I think it's going to be Marco. I think it's going to be Gonzalez, because I think the long-term plan for him is to be out there. But I've heard he's pitched so well in his starts that now he may be under consideration for that sixth starter. But, you know, a name that's coming quickly, and it seems just like Weaver last year, is Flaherty. Mm-hmm. He's moving up, and he's dominating levels. And it makes me wonder if, you know, how Weaver kind of jumped some guys last year just due to performance. Yeah. I'm wondering if that's not going to be the Flaherty situation this year. If it's his turn, if someone goes down and they need somebody and it's close to his day in the rotation, it would not surprise me if Flaherty got that spot start. I think Weaver is your sixth starter right now. Mm-hmm. But to answer the question, I think that they probably hold him off for that. I don't think we'll ever see Weaver in the bullpen. I think I think we'll see Marco in the bullpen before that.
Yeah, probably. It's difficult for sure to know, because I did use Weaver in the bullpen some last year. That being said, you're probably right. I think they probably do bring Marco up. The issue with Marco Gonzalez is that he didn't have options, but he does. He has this year's options because I don't think he's on a rehab right now. He's actually assigned to the minor league.
Yeah, yeah.
So his option has been used for this year. You might as well go back and forth. I think you're probably right on that. And honestly, unless Michael Wacha is in trouble, and his last two starts have not been good, but they were both against the Dodgers, so we'll see how he does against the Reds this week. Wait, because he's pitching tomorrow night, isn't he?
He goes tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah, so how he does tomorrow night against the Cubs. Before you start really, really getting concerned. But, you know, it may be right now it doesn't feel like there's going to be a need for a sixth starter, if you will. That happens usually. We'll usually probably see somebody at some point in time. But yeah, I think you probably keep Weaver for that. But it really may even boil down to who pitched last when they need a bullpen arm.
True.
You know, if Weaver's rested, he comes up as that arm. If Gonzalez is rested, he comes up. Whoever can do that well. Because I think either one of those guys could be that. Unless they do something like trade Lance Lynn, and then you get into a lot of different situations.
Sure.
Because Lance Lynn and Carson Kelly and Harrison Bader, well, you know, that starts to get you something. And it would be fascinating. Again, I don't see it happening. But it would be fascinating to see if the Cardinals go out and trade for Manny Machado and then have him for a year plus and see if they, you know, give them a chance to try to sign an extension.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it worked for McGuire, it worked for Edmonds, it worked for Rowland. I don't know that it works anymore. You're not going to get a discount. Don't, you know, just go into it knowing that all you're doing is buying first rights to bid on this guy. You're not really saving yourself any money. But you can sell somebody on that. Because I think there's an argument that the Cardinals are not a destination anymore. That may be, why ever that may be, you may need to do something like that to make that kind of deal. But, again, I don't know that the Orioles are out of it enough to do that.
They're pretty good. Yeah. That's...
I mean, it would take some serious stuff. You would take them thinking that they needed a Lance Lynn and they could do something, you know, and could sign him. And that's the kicker, too, there. You know, could they sign him to an extension?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And not to jump out, I know we've been on for a little while, but you know an interesting trade name that I don't think gets brought up enough, but I think we'll get dangled out there, and it's from a strength of the team, is I bet they check the temperature on Rosenthal a little bit, because I think you can get a pretty big haul on it. And I'm not so sure that they want to deal with Boris when it comes time in a year.
Well, you know, I don't know. You know, of course, I think back to J.D. Drew and Rick Ankiel, who both had Scott Boris, and they didn't have any problem dealing with him then, but that's been a long time ago, and that was Walt Jocketty.
I wonder. I don't know if the Cardinals are ever going to pay that much for a guy that's going to be a closer, and then they dangled around. I don't know. I don't think they've done themselves any favors by actually tantalizing that starting spot. You know what I mean? Because nothing that they've done with Rosenthal they've ever stuck with. Now he may be the next Isringhausen though that they overpay for the closer spot. I'm completely against that. But I can't imagine them re-signing O. You know, he's 35, showing signs of the decline after 1 year. You know how fragile I think that closer spot is in the first place. You know, hardly ever have two back-to-back good years. So, you know, maybe that is their plan. And they're, okay, Rosenthal's here to stay. Let's pay him what he's worth to do it. But I just don't feel like that. I just don't feel like they're going to pay that for a guy that's going to be their closer.
And maybe not, but then if you trade Rosenthal and you don't sign O, then here any other year, you have nobody as a closer. And that's, you know, and nobody, unless you think Rowan Wick's ready to take over the role. Which,
yeah, I think it would be a development type situation. I mean, that's, and it, you know, is Tui Vaiola ever going to do it?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's one of those. I don't know. I mean, there's so more of the head scratchers that we've talked about. I mean, there's just a lot of, there's a lot of question marks on the team.
Yeah, there are a lot. So again, it's going to take a move that we haven't really seen out of John Mozeliak, and that's what's going to be interesting. Our final question is from Ben Adams, the P-Vine, who's been sending us some questions as of late. Do we need to go ahead and look forward to next year? I don't think so. I think that there's still a lot of baseball to be played, obviously. There's a division that doesn't play, that doesn't look any better than the Cardinals have looked. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, if the Cubs hadn't won the World Series last year, what Cub fans would be thinking about this year? I mean, you go into this year thinking you're a 100-win team again, and you're treading water at 27-27, and you're not even leading the division when you should be running away with it. Of course, you won the World Series last year, and so nobody cares. I think this is the month that's going to tell.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at this schedule, you look at the Cubs schedule. If the Cubs ever get, in my feeling, the Cubs ever get five games up on the division, you probably start thinking about next year, because I don't know that the Cubs would. You know, I don't know if the Cardinals have enough to catch up with the Cubs. I mean, obviously, you got head-to-heads. You got possibility. I mean, there's still a lot of games left to be played, but it feels to me that if at the end of June the Cubs are five games up on the Cardinals, you watch this year, but you don't expect anything. That's kind of my feeling.
Yeah, well, and, you know, to answer his question, I don't know if the Cardinals ever look toward next year. And, you know, one thing that we've mentioned on here before, and it kind of goes understated, are we certain that we're not in a rebuild right now? Is this – because if their rebuilding is going to be, hey, let's figure out what we've got, let's compete for one of these wild card spots, then we'll see what we got, then we know where to improve. I'm not so certain we're not in a Cardinals-type rebuild right now, that they're going to ride this out until they figure out for certain, like, just like we said, stay the course, but – it almost feels like it's run its course, that we are going to start seeing some moves made now, just because we know they have money. They've dangled it out to free agents and didn't put it out. They haven't come anywhere near what they offered some of these other guys. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that it's ever a look toward next year type situation, but I do think we may be in some kind of a mild rebuild right now.
Maybe. I think that's kind of the Cardinal motto, or MO, or whatever you want to call it, has been not to rebuild, but, and it's that old, mm-hmm. don't rebuild, reload, but it's not even that, it's more of a, we're going to compete, and we're going to try to win as we phase in new players.
Exactly.
It's not an Atlanta Braves, it's not a Houston Astros, it's not a, we're going to be terrible so we can bring in new players, because, you know, that doesn't work. I mean, that's not going to fly for Cardinals. Because you'd have to have probably two or three years like that to have a good enough draft to come up and really make an impact. I mean, and Cardinals fans are not going to handle 3 years of that. I mean, they're just not.
No.
And
they don't have the draft picks to do it for the next year.
Well, this year they don't. I mean, but if they were, you know, if they piddled around, you know, this coming next year, and then, you know, the next two or three years they were just middle of the pack or below at something. But you've got to be bad to get those top four or five picks that make that difference. You know, into the first round you can get a good player, but you're not getting a quality player. And that's kind of what we're seeing with the Cardinals. For so long, they have drafted at the end of the draft, and so you get good players, you get quality players, you get major league players, but you don't get superstars. You know, they got lucky with Pujols, really. You know, they've been fortunate with some late round picks, but you're not the top talent. The guys, you know, the Bryce Harpers, the Steven Strasburgs, Mike Trout even went lower than you would have thought. But those kind of guys usually go in the first five players. And the Cardinals are not going to be bad enough to draft in those spots. That's why we talk so much about Luis Robert. That's why getting Delvin Perez last year, even with those PED rumors around him, was so huge. Or I guess it was last year, maybe year before. You know, these things are big. They're not going to be able to rebuild and be awesome, have some awesome players. I mean, and I'm not talking about good players. Really, really Albert Pujols level players. They're not going to do that through the draft. It's just not going to happen. And so, you know, without two or three bad years, really bad years on the field, then nobody wants to see that either. It's, you know, the Cardinal fans want to have their cake and eat it too. If they want to be competitive while they have a strong farm system, you know, while they're winning championships. I mean, it's difficult to put everything together. And so we're just going to have to, they're going to have to do something that's going to cost spending money. And I think that's why we're going to have to see them either spending money or trading prospects or trading major league talent to get that bat, most likely, that they need. And that's just not something we've seen a lot of out of the Cardinals, especially John Mozeliak.
Well, and to wrap this up, I will say, I know that we beat up Matheny a lot on here, and we even give him a little, maybe more praise than it's done. I will say something that may surprise people. I completely have faith in Mozeliak in the organization. Yeah, I do. I mean, I know that these are frustrating times, and it's frustrating as a fan. You know, the product on the field right now just doesn't seem to be very good. But I do trust in the organization, and I'm a big believer in Mozeliak. So I think that whatever direction this is, I think that it's the right, it is the correct way. And, you know, may go against everything I've said on here for, you know, 3 months. But I do have faith that they're going in the right direction.
Well, hopefully so. And again, you know, I think Mo has come under more criticism as of late than he has in his whole entire career. And some of that's valid. You know, like I said, I just finished the wrap up of his trade history, I think, over last week. Maybe it was the week before that I finished it. I don't know how time goes by, but. And I don't think there's a lot of aggressiveness in that, and there's not a lot of, you know, we've had problems in the free agent market, and some of that stuff, again, each decision by itself makes sense. Each decision is not a deal breaker. You start putting it all together, and you kind of get the team that you got right now. So, it's not good. Hopefully, though, we'll see better stuff next week. Alan and I, again, we're going to St. Louis next week. We're going to do the Blogger Day activities. The Cardinals have invited a number of the bloggers to come in. You have a question and answer with Mo. Then you get to sit in the suite and watch the game and eat food and hang out. And it's a lot of fun. Saturday night, we typically do a dinner beforehand. I'm still finishing up. I've gotten some suggestions. I think I know where we're going, but I need to call and make sure. once we get that lined out, we will put it on Twitter. And if anybody is in the area that wants to meet Alan and wants to meet me, wants to meet some of the other bloggers or podcasters that you may listen to or read, you're welcome to join us on Tuesday night or on Saturday night. It's a, you know, pay for your own, but you just come out and hang out, and we'll talk baseball and things like that. So follow me on Twitter at C70. I'm sure Alan will retweet if I put it out there when we figure it out.
Sure.
You know, follow him as well. Because we'd love to see some people that are listening to us. You can come tell us how bad this is and why what we need to do to fix it. So,
yeah.
But it's looking forward to it. But anyway, we may or may not do a show next week. It kind of depends on what Friday looks like for us, and you know, getting ready for that trip. Both of us have a pretty good haul to get to St. Louis, so we may not do a show next week, maybe 2 weeks from now. But hopefully, whenever we do a show, we'll have a lot more exciting, fun, and positive things to talk about. So, for Alan, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Good night.
Sutter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!